to books now, and joining me in studio is Declan Burke. Declan has been reading some of the latest crime fiction to be published, and he's here with his recommendations this evening. You're starting tonight, Declan, with the latest from John Grisham. Legal thrillers is what we think of, or certainly what I think of when I think of John Grisham. Where are we at with this new book, Grey Mountain?
Yeah, very much a legal thriller. It opens in New York about 10 days after Lehman Brothers has folded, and this is a knock-on effect for Samantha Cofer. She's a third-year associate, one of New York's largest firms, and basically she's out of work and she needs to find a job, but so is virtually every other lawyer in New York. So she ends up in the Appalachian Mountains working for a mountain legal aid clinic, and she thinks she's going to be bored to tears, but suddenly she's shocked to discover this is a world of poverty, brutality, corruption. There's a lot of environmental destruction going on. These beautiful mountains that we think of, they're being destroyed, and there's also a particularly nasty slice of legal corruption goes on that goes to the very heart of the lawmaking process in America.
And how passionate would you say Grisham is? It's through Samantha's eyes that we see this, but how passionate a view of the legal world do we get outside of that corruption?
Very much so, and I get the sense that it may well have been the reason he wrote the book was to kind of give credit to these people that work in legal aid, because big law, as he calls it, that it takes a real hammering in this book. And Grisham, of course, is a former lawyer himself, and you might argue, and certainly I would argue, that he's possibly a bit too passionate about the legal issues at the expense of story and characterisation, whereas I thoroughly enjoyed the character of Samantha in this and her experience of this show and learning to live with this culture shock. There are a little bit too many digressions into kind of things like lung disease and meth addiction and political apathy in the Appalachians that could have been done in a much more subtle way, I thought, particularly given Grisham's experience.
Previous Grisham novels like A Time to Kill and The Firm made their way onto the big screen. Do you think that Grey Mountain will do that?
It could do, because it's perfectly set up for a brilliant female lead. I can see someone like Reese Witherspoon making a really good movie out of this. I much preferred his previous one, Sycamore Row, which was a sequel to A Time to Kill from last year. But for Grisham fans, I think this will probably hit the mark.
All right, that's Grey Mountain by John Grisham, published by Hodder and Stoughton. And by the way, we will be putting up all of the details of the books that Declan's speaking about this evening, so don't worry if you don't get them all jotted down right now. We'll put them up on the website. Second book you have for us is a debut novel, Finnish author this time, Katie Haikapelto. Who's the detective at the heart of Ms. Haikapelto's story?
Anna Fekete, who was born in Serbia of Hungarian ethnicity. So an unusual identity here as we come into the story. And the story starts on her first day in the job as a detective in the Finnish police service. And it's a bit of a baptism of fire, because a jogger is shot to death on the outskirts of the city. And at the same time, or shortly beforehand, they take a rather chilling phone call from a young Kurdish woman, a teenager I should say, who believes she's about to be murdered in a so-called honour killing. So, as I say, a baptism of fire for Anna Fekete, and it's those twin narratives kind of propel the story forward.
Presumably to a point where they meet?
They interact without actually being part of the same mystery. I won't say too much more than that. But I will also, this is a debut novel. Finland is becoming a more of a power base in terms of Scandinavian or Nordic noir, which it didn't used to be. And this is a very interesting story, because it's as much about identity and how people who are from outside of Finland fit into Finnish and Scandinavian society and how they don't. Really.
Where does she fit in with previous, like what style would she be closest to in terms of previous Scandinavian fiction that you've read, crime fiction?
Well, I would say it fits into it quite well, because it's a police procedural, and quite a lot, an overwhelming amount is of the Scandinavian fiction or police procedural, told in a very serious and sober tone. It's very much in that framework. Now, there are other newer Scandinavian novels. We might get to those in subsequent weeks, but it's very much in the framework. If you have liked someone like Karen Fossum, for example, the Norwegian writer who's excellent, this is like a younger version of Karen Fossum.
That's Katie Haikapelto. Her book is called The Hummingbird, and it's published by Arcadia Books. Something a little bit closer to home now, and this is Adrian McKinty's latest novel, Gun Street Girl. This is the fourth book to feature Detective Sean Duffy, who finds himself in Northern Ireland in a very peculiar circumstance in some ways.
Well, Sean Duffy manages to find himself in a number of strange circumstances, but what characterised the last three books was a kind of tension between Sean Sean Duffy, who was a Catholic in mid-1980s Northern Ireland, who is a detective in the RUC, which was predominantly Protestant and to a large extent loyalist, we might argue. But there was a tension between his background and the job that he wanted to do and the job that he was let to by his colleagues. That tension seems to have dissipated for this. Sean Duffy has essentially proved himself to his RUC colleagues. And this one opens in 1985. And the news of the impending Anglo-Irish agreement has sent Northern Ireland into a turmoil of riots and strikes, etc.
Yeah, because in the previous novels, McKinty has very much linked whatever story he was telling in with a very specific event in Northern Irish history. The DeLorean car factory was one of the ones. That
That's
I think
correct.
Margaret Thatcher coming to being... the hunger strikes was another one of Margaret Thatcher's involvement there. So this time it's the Anglo-Irish agreement.
The that provides the background, but the more specific, I suppose, event that people would remember is the theft of Javelin missile systems from Short's manufacturing plant, which caused quite a hoo-ha when it was discovered that there were possibly rogue members of American Secret Service involved. That's certainly what the novel revolves around. But what I liked most about this, the investigation starts with the murder of two so-called civilians. It looks like a double killing, a professional hit. And how can you investigate a murder in a time of incipient civil war is what Duffy wonders. And there's a kind of absurdist quality of humour to this, which as Duffy says later on, out here on the edge of the dying British Empire, farce is the only mode of narrative discourse that makes any sense at all. So this is almost like a black farce of a police procedural in order to kind of accent how ludicrous things were in 1985 in Northern Ireland.
Is that a very different tone from the previous three Sean Duffy books?
Yeah, I found that there was humour in the previous three, but they were much darker and much more serious in tone. It's as if, as I said, Duffy has been accepted by his colleagues and to a large extent Adrian McKinty, who has won a couple of awards, one in the States and one in Australia in the last year with the Sean Duffy novels, has also found his sense of confidence with his readers, and he can relax and he can let Duffy be more of a conventional kind of police detective.
So do you think that bodes well in terms of further life for Sean Duffy, or is this an end to it, would you say?
I don't know. It seems to be at the end of every novel it's the end of Sean Duffy, but he's still alive and he seems to be growing into his role, so hopefully there will be a fifth.
All right, that's Gun Street Girl from Adrian McKinty, another one of Declan Burke's recommendations in terms of crime fiction publications for us this evening. Malice is the latest book from a Japanese author called Keigo Higashino. He has created a mystery around writers here. So what sort of writers are we dealing with? It's the death of it. Is it a best-selling novelist propels this story into being?
That's right. A character called Hidaka, who is a best-selling literary novel, very serious. He's a something of a superstar in Japan, according to this story. Now, he is discovered dead, and police detective Kaga presumed it looks like a locked room mystery, the classic locked room mystery, the beloved of mystery readers. But quickly he comes to suspect Hidaka's best friend, who is himself an author called Nanaguchi, but he writes children's stories, when a series of notebooks are discovered, and it looks like that Nanaguchi has been the ghostwriter of Hidaka's novels, hasn't got the credit, and has essentially lashed out and wants to become acclaimed as a literary novelist himself. Now, that's a very interesting story. That's about the first 10 or 12 pages, because what Higashino is doing here, he's offering us an unusual kind of take on the police procedural. He's got a locked room mystery in there as well, but the story is also functioning as a critique of the crime novel, because as Detective Kaga is going along, he's writing his notes, which are kind of placed in narratively, kind of running in tandem with the story itself, and a number of characters are given their own version of events. So it's a very interesting way of telling a crime story while also commenting on what the crime story should aspire to be.
What about the translation here? I doubt you've read it in the original Japanese, but do you have a sense that the translation is working well?
I really did. Alexander O. Smith is the translator here. It's very crisp, very tautly told, as you might expect from, for example, if a police detective was writing notes, you wouldn't expect very lush prose, for example. It compared to Higashino's English language debut, if people have come across The Devotion of Suspect X, which was also a very clever take, and again a very clever critique of the crime novel, again very crisply done, very succinctly done. He's not overwriting at all here. Beautifully translated.
And if I'm not looking for too simplistic a sort of characterization here, is there a characterization in terms of Japanese crime fiction, and does this Higashino novel fit into that?
I haven't read a huge amount of Japanese fiction. There seems to be a kind of a more a more clear-eyed, more cold, precise tone. That it seemed to look at crime fiction as much more of a document of its society and what it can tell us about. So I found the reading of this very entertaining, but it doesn't have the usual kind of flourishes and curlicues that a more conventional, we'd say, Western mystery might have. But hugely enjoyable and very, very brave kind of writing.
All right, that's Malice by Keigo Higashino, and it's published by Little Brown. Finally then, in this roundup for us this evening, Declan, you've chosen some historical crime fiction. Wayfaring Stranger, this is from James Lee Burke. What part of history and where are we in and where are we?
Well, this opens with Hackberry Holland, who will be very familiar to James Lee Burke's fans from some of his earlier novels, Lay Down My Sword and Shield, back in the early 70s, for example. But the Hackberry Holland here is the grandfather of the character that readers will be familiar with. Now, this Hackberry Holland has arrested John Wesley Hardin, which at the start gives just a flavour of the Old West. And that motif has continued throughout because the story belongs to Weldon Holland, who is the grandson of Hackberry. And he has an encounter with Bonnie and Clyde, which sets up again, we're looking at gangsters, we're looking at a kind of a lawlessness in the heart of America.
So has he brought lots of real life gangsters into this, or is the
there are Bugsy Siegel has a little cameo in this. There are enough real life gangsters and people outlaws we would be familiar with to say yes to that answer. But really, it's Weldon's story, because Weldon grows up. He's a teenager when he meets Bonnie and Clyde. Grows up, goes and fights in the Battle of the Bulge, and has a life changing experience there, which really kind of puts lead in his pencil for when he comes back. He starts drilling for oil in Louisiana and comes up against very legal and very clean-cut but absolutely ruthless gangsters in the oil drilling business.
Is there something very particular in the way that James Lee Burke tells this story?
He's after a very different kind of heroism, I think, that he's gone after in the past. I mean, readers of James Lee Burke may feel that he's become kind of thematically repetitive over the last few Dave Robichaud books, for example. In this, he's after the classic sense of a hero. I mean, the book is littered with references to Chaucer and Shakespeare, Mallory. Even he refers near the end to the Homeric epic doesn't have to be discovered inside a book. It begins just west of Fort Worth and extends all the way to Santa Monica. And he's trying to suggest, I presume, that, you know, that the Homeric epic can be found within the framework, the very, very broad framework of a crime novel, which this is. But his aspirations, I think, are more literary than straightforward crime in this one.
All right, that's the final recommendation from Declan Burke this evening. The book is called Wayfaring Stranger by James Lee Burke, and it's published by Orion. We'll put the details of all of the books that Declan has mentioned to us this evening on our website. That's rte.ie/radio1/arena.